Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your girl, Sam.
And it's Ash.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
I swear I will try to get her to stop doing that.
Nope. No, because everybody's addicted to it now.
Well, no, the singing's fine. Your damn sex operator voice has got to go.
Nope. I refuse to do it.
Y'all, there's been a lot of updates coming up. It's like, hopefully the Monica Moynihan thing starts happening pretty quick. The whole zombies and the Daybells.
Oh, the Daybells. I just want to just punch both of them in the face.
Right. And then, supposedly there's an update about Alyssa's case coming up there. I'm going to try to listen to her podcast to try to update you guys because it's crazy. And we've already recorded one today, so we're going to hopefully make this a mini episode. And this is going to be in twos because this is crazy.
It's about the rain. That's thunder.
Is it thunder or somebody moving the trash can?
It sounds like thunder.
Okay. So anyways, this is the story of the Stainer family.
Which I've never heard of.
Really?
Uh-uh.
Okay, so Stephen Gregory Stainer was the third child out of five. He was born to Delbert and Kay Stainer in Mercer, California. Don't roast me. I'm a window licker.
What? What does that even mean?
It means I'm not smart.
Oh my god.
When we finally get a...
What?
Where people can join
a Patreon.
Yes, when we get our Patreon, literally we have to have a level called the Widow Wicker.
Oh my god.
For me. Okay, anyways, he had three sisters and an older brother named Carrie. On the afternoon of December 4th, 1972, Stephen was approached on his way home from school by a man named Irvin Edward Murphy, who had become the acquaintance with the convicted child rapist Kenneth Parnell, because they both worked for Yosemite National Park. So that's how they kind of got to know each other. Irvin was described by those who knew him as a trusting, naive, simple-minded man. He was enlisted by Kenneth, who passed himself off as an aspiring minister, into helping him abduct a young boy so Kenneth could, quote-unquote, raise him in a religious type. So,
what?
He basically seen this guy that was kind of simple-minded and tricked him to help him. He was a window licker.
Oh, God.
Okay, so acting on the instructions of Kenneth, Irvin passed out gospel tracts to boys walking home from school that day. After spotting Stephen, he claimed to be the church representative, seeking donation, and asked young Stephen if he thought his mom had any clothes that they could donate. So Stephen, being a young kid, was like, yeah, my mom, you know, we probably had some stuff. So
yeah, we had some old hands. That I don't want, so. Right.
And then Irvin asked him where he lived and if he would be willing to take him home to talk to his mom. And this being the 70s, of course, little Stephen didn't think twice to jump in the car. He was just like, sure, come on, I'll show you where I live.
I'm sick of it.
It was simpler times then.
It was simpler times.
People used
and I
to
get
just
it.
Like.
Not lock your doors ever.
Not lock your doors. They would just hitchhike. Like, I feel like going to California today. Let me just throw out my little thumb.
Right. I'm going to put my little thumb out there so I can...
No stranger danger was known then.
Mm-mm.
So after he agreed, Kenneth pulled up in a white Buick. And Stephen willingly climbed into the car. So Kenneth then drove a confused Stephen to his cabin in nearby Cathy's Valley instead. So he was just like, I thought we were going to my house.
My house is the other way around.
Right? How scary would that be? This isn't where I parked my car.
This ain't my field. Oh, God. That was just hilarious.
So, not knowing that Kenneth's cabin was only several hundred feet from his maternal grandfather's residence.
Wow.
Yeah. So, on his way to the cabin, he stopped off at a phone booth and comes back telling Stephen that his parents didn't want him anymore. And they had enough mouths to feed, so they really couldn't afford him. And then said that he would need to go with Kenneth for now and live.
Whoa.
Right.
Oh, my God. Can you see
and
that?
He was young. Just
it's like he was only how old? Seven?
Yeah.
Like 7 or 8 or whatever.
He was seven.
So I was like, think about just your little
brain. Seven-year-old brain.
Your little peanut brain.
Right.
He's like, oh, my parents don't want me anymore. Oh, I'll be so sad.
They can't afford me, yeah.
They can't afford me anymore. Nuh-uh.
The first night they get to the cabin, sadly, Kenneth begins raping Stephen. He continues to rape him on December 17th, 1972, and then he continues to rape him throughout the night. On December 17th, 1972, 13 days later, he tells Kenneth he wants to go home many times during this first week. And Kenneth told Stephen that he had been granted legal custody and his parents didn't want him anymore. That's sad.
That's so sad. Sad because, like, his little brain is like, I can't believe my parents don't want me anymore, you know?
And not only that, he's been continually raped and he's just, like, not knowing what's going on, thinking that his parents didn't want him anymore. And at this time, Kenneth started calling the boy Dennis Gregory Parnell, retaining Stephen's real middle name and his real date of birth, kind of to keep make it easier for him to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then he enrolled him in various schools all over the next several years. He even passed himself off as Stephen's dad. The two frequently moved around in California, living in locations including Santa Rosa, Compache. Kenneth allowed Stephen to begin drinking at a young age and let him virtually come and go as he pleased. So he didn't have any rules. He had to change his name and all that. So Kenneth bounced from one menial job to another. Some of his work required travel, leaving Stephen unguarded. Later, Stephen would recall that he would have easily use these absences as opportunities to leave, but he didn't know how to get help. Because if you remember, he thought his parents didn't want him.
Right.
And he didn't have anywhere to go.
That sucks so bad because, like, you have so many opportunities to just leave. But it's like, how do I get back to where I'm? Because he probably didn't really know where he was.
Where he was, yeah. And not just that, like I said, he didn't think his parents wanted him, so where would he go?
Anywhere, just somewhere.
Right, just away. One of the few positives in his life was that Kenneth gave him a dog that he named Queenie. It was a Manchester Terrier. The dog was given to Kenneth by his mom, who was not aware of Stephen's existence. So, like, he really loved this dog, right?
Mm.
And it was the only thing that he really had for company. During a period of time, for about 18 months, a woman named Barbara Mathias lived with the two, according to Stephen. Barbara and Kenneth raped him on 9 separate occasions at the age of 9. So she's a piece of, you know, rotting garbage too. In 1975, on Kenneth's instruction, Barbara tried to lure another young boy to the car, but it was unsuccessful. Barbara later claimed to have been completely unaware that Dennis, a.k.a. Stephen, had in fact been kidnapped.
Listen, can you see? Okay, so basically, Barbara's trying to lure somebody else.
Uh-huh.
Can you just see they're just, like, sitting in the car and, like, you know, she's trying to lure somebody else to the car and all of a sudden he's like, run, bitch, run! You better run, bitch!
Right? Oh, who? Stephen?
Yes!
My whole thing is, she claimed that she didn't know. I'm sorry that the person me and old Kenneth had been raping for 9 separate occasions. He was kidnapped? What?
What?
Like, okay, it doesn't matter that he was kidnapped. He still raped a 9-year-old.
Right, just disgusting.
Right. Okay, so, the older Stephen got, the more Kenneth knew that the time was coming that he couldn't control him anymore. So, he tried to look for a younger child to kidnap. Kenneth had used Stephen to kidnap children on prior occasions. However, all the attempts were unsuccessful. This caused Kenneth to believe that Stephen lacked the means to be an accomplice. Of course.
Wow. So basically he was like, you know what? You suck as an accomplice.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be an accomplice anyway, stupid. Right.
So Stephen later revealed, of course, that he intentionally sabotaged these Bell's kidnapping.
I told you.
And on February of 1980, Kenneth and a teenage friend of Stephen's named Randall Gorman kidnapped 5-year-old Timmy White of Ukiah. And motivated partly to the boy's distress, Stephen decided to return the boy to his parents. So he remembered what it was like to be this little boy.
Oh, right.
So he decided to return this boy. On March 1st, 1980, while Kenneth was away at his night security job. Yuck. He was like a security guy, but yet he was over here.
Stealing children.
Stephen took Tim and hitchhiked to Ukiah.
I just said.
I don't care what you said.
That's how it's pronounced.
I bet people are going to roast us telling we're both wrong. he couldn't locate White's home address, so he decided to have Tim walk to the police station and ask for help without him, but he didn't want to. So on the way to the police station, the police actually spotted both of the boys and detained them, and Stephen immediately identified himself and Timothy, but basically he just revealed that his name was Stephen and he was kidnapped, but he really didn't remember anything about his past. On daybreak of March 1st, 1980, Kenneth had been arrested on the suspicion of abducting both boys. When the police checked into his background, they found a previous sodomy conviction of 1951.
Dang.
Right? Both children were reunited with their families on that day. In 1981, Kenneth was tried and convicted of kidnapping Timothy and Stephen in two separate trials. He was sentenced to 7 years, but was paroled after serving just 5.
First of all, he should have been in there for life.
Right. But this is the thing, okay? Kenneth was not charged with the numerous sexual assaults on Stephen and the other boys because most of them occurred outside the jurisdiction. So that's why he didn't get that long.
Hilarious.
He just got kidnapping. And by then, they were outside the statute of limitations, which I don't think a statute of limitations should be on rape.
Yeah, I think rape and murder, I think they should just be indefinite.
Yeah.
They shouldn't run out.
So the Mendocino County prosecutors, acting most entirely alone, decided not to prosecute Kenneth for the sexual assaults that occurred in their jurisdiction, likely due to belief that they were protecting Stephen because rape and molestation victims were seen as damaged goods.
What the hell? Right? How are they damaged goods?
Right.
So oh,
especially
they suck.
Back then, they didn't want to go with the rape charges, basically, because back then, gay and homosexuality, which, first of all, he didn't want this. He didn't
he
ask for
he was raped.
It. Yeah, so.
So stupid.
They thought that they could.
They suck. Yeah. Y'all suck, man. How you, man? I'm mad for real.
Right.
What? I'm mad.
You would think that as a parent, you'd be like, no, I want justice for my kid.
Of course.
Like this person.
And first of all, I mean, he was gone for how long? What?
Years.
Seven years or so?
You would think that the family would fight for that, you know?
Yeah.
So Murphy and Portman, who helped abduct White, remember Murphy was and Portman was the friends of Stephen, who helped abduct White, were convicted of lesser charges. Both claimed they knew nothing of the sexual assault. Old Barb's ass was never arrested.
Oh, no, she should have been under the jail, too.
She remembered the kindness of his quote-unquote Uncle Murphy had shown him in his first week of captivity, and he was as much Kenneth's victim as he was. Basically, the window licker. He didn't really know what was going on. And like I said, he wasn't that bright. So, he just known, the first week that he was there, he just kind of considered this guy Uncle Murphy. And that he was really nice to him and didn't hurt him. So, he didn't know that he was abducting.
Uh-huh.
Which is sad because, you know, he used that to his advantage.
Exactly.
And poor old dude just thought he was just helping out.
I'm still mad about that. It's like damaged goods. Asshole.
After returning to his family, Stephen had trouble adjusting back into a more structured household. Think about it. He had been allowed to, like, smoke and drink and come and go as he pleased. And now that he was back, he had to really have structure and he just didn't really acclimate back well. In an interview he did with Newsweek shortly after his escape, he said returning almost a grown man, yet his parents seeing him as their 7-year-old boy. You know, they didn't have that time to, I don't know, I think it'd be kind of weird too, right?
Yeah.
He left and he was abducted at 7 and now he's back. You kind of still see him as that 7-year-old. You don't see him grown. So after they stopped trying to teach him the fundamentals all over again, it got better. Like their relationship kind
of
got better.
Oh. Of course, because they're basically just trying to catch up.
Right. He then said that he wondered why his dad didn't hug him anymore and that everything had changed. He sometimes blamed himself and wondered if he even should have came home.
Whoa.
Right. And it's had to be hard because...
That's hard because, like...
And it's so sad because you think, oh, these people would be so grateful and so happy coming home. And it's just like, they have to acclimate.
Like, it's like, how... Like, who is this person?
Right. Like, your family doesn't know what to do. You don't know what to do.
Mm-mm.
It's just crazy. Stephen went to brief counseling, but his dad didn't really agree with it. Like I said, back in the 70s, they all thought that,
oh, God,
you know, counseling was bad. But now it's more acceptable, and, you know, everybody goes to get help, basically. But back then, it really wasn't welcomed. It was really looked down on. And he refused to disclose all the details of the sexual abuse. So he really didn't talk about it.
Oh, of course.
In 2007 interview, Stephen's sister, Corey, said that her brother did not seek counseling because his dad said he didn't need it. She added, Stephen got on with his life, but he was pretty messed up. Which, yeah, I can see that. He was bullied by other children at school for being molested and eventually dropped out.
Like, how do you bully someone who's been molested? Because they didn't ask for that.
Right. Kids are just ruthless, dude.
Kids are just mean.
Yeah. Serious. Stephen began to drink frequently and even was kicked out of the family home.
What?
And this really made his relationship with his dad strained. In 1985, good year. Stephen married 17-year-old Jody Edmondson, who he had two children with. He then worked with the child abduction group and spoke to children about personal safety, which is good because he finally got out of that funk and learned to use his experience with helping children not fall into what he did. He also gave another interview about his own kidnapping. He joined the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints just before his death. At the end of his death, Stephen was living in Merced and working at a pizza shop.
Aww.
So he was getting his life together, and it's so sad because on September 16th, 1989, Stephen sustained fatal head injuries on his way home from work when his motorcycle collided with a car. 500 people attended his funeral, which this part really tugged on my soul because one of his pallbearers was 14-year-old Timmy.
Aww.
The one that he saved.
Right.
I thought that was really sweet. Okay, so we're to the aftermath. 10 years after Stephen's death, the city of Merced asked its residents to pose names for City Park, honoring notable citizens. His parents proposed that one of them be named Stannard Park, and this idea was eventually rejected, and the honor was given to another resident. And this is all because of Stephen's brother.
Mm.
Because later he was charged with a crime. Wait, which had
nothing to do with anything.
Because of his last name.
Oh.
Because they thought Stannard Park would be associated with his brother instead of Stephen. Which later, like I said, part two will be all about his brother, because his brother went off the freaking deep end.
Dang.
In 2004, Kenneth then 72 was convicted of trying the previous year to persuade his nurse to get him a younger boy for $500.
How'd you have $500? Ain't you in the pen?
No, remember he got let out.
Oh, yeah, he did.
So in 2000, he was still at his old trick.
Oh, disgusting something.
The nurse, aware of his past, reported this to local police. Timmy White, then an adult, was subpoenaed to testify in Kenneth's trial. And although Stephen was dead, his testimony against Kenneth's earlier trial was read to jurors as evidence in 2004. So he was still from the grave coming back to, no, this person needs to be put away.
Child, Stephen came back from the grave and grabbed Kenneth by his balls and twisted him. He said, listen, you coming down with me.
Right. He was convicted. Kenneth died later of natural causes, unfortunately. He should have rotted in jail in January of 2008 at a California medical facility where he was serving 25 years to life.
Mm.
I never get that 25 years to life. I guess 20 life, but if he's good, he could get out in 25 years, basically.
Yeah, it all depends. It all depends on his behavior and all this stuff. Like, the minimum he serves is 25.
Okay.
It's called an indeterminate sentence.
This is really good, too. White, which you remember Timmy White, the little boy that got abducted, he later became Los Angeles deputy. He, unfortunately, his life was not good either because he died on April 1st, 2010 at the age of 35 from pulmonary embolism.
Mm.
White was survived by his wife, Dina, and two young children, as well as his mother, father, stepfather, and sister. Nearly 9 months later, a statue of Stephen and White was dedicated in Applegate Park to honor Stephen and give families of missing and kidnapped children hope that they'll be found alive.
Aww.
That's nice.
That's nice.
Yeah. Like I said, short and sweet. You probably know about his brother's crimes. He was the one that was killing folks in Yosemite.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't get that, like, how you went through this with the brother, but whatever. So we're going to leave you with that for tonight. Hope y'all enjoyed this little mini episode. It is raining, so we're going to go jump in our little boat and float on home. We hope you keep it classy.
Keep it sassy.
And don't get murdered.
Nope.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Ew. Ew.